We have a quorum, and so our first order of business will be to deal with the minutes of March 22nd. Are there any Representative Magnus moves minutes of March 22nd? Any additions or corrections? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Representative Magnus passed the amendments. That's close. Okay, let's see.
Have we voted on the minutes yet? I'm against it.
You're against it.
That'll be quicker. Easter.
Representative Howes.
Yeah.
House File 1518. I'll move House File 1518 for Representative Howes. And if you'd like to explain the bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And gosh, I hate to say it's a simple bill, but it really is simple. We're going to take the daily cross-country ski pass, raise it from 2 to 4, the annual from $9 to $14, and the three-year pass from $24 to $39. As of this date, there's no opposition. I do have a person from the Minnesota Nordic Ski Association that could testify if you'd like, Mr. Chairman. And the DNR is here also to support the bill.
Okay, I understand this is a DNR initiative. So.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, would you like to bring up your testifiers?
Be right, line up.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Leroy Youngblum from the Mora area. Okay. Some years ago, we formed the Minnesota Nordic Ski Association simply because there was no organization representing the cross-country skiers, amongst other things that we belong to. Our big problem was we were not getting much funding for our cross-country ski trails. And we were kind of like a poor cousin. People more or less forgot about us. And the cross-country skiers themselves are not people that are dependent. They've been fairly self-sufficient. But the numbers have grown considerably. And we thought one of the things we could do was to voluntarily ask that our passes be increased in cost to help fund the grooming and maintenance of the trails. So that's where I come from.
Okay. Are there any questions? Chairman Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much, to either of you, how much more grooming and maintenance will occur with an increased fee?
I don't have any specific figures on that. We're constantly behind on our cost for the grooming.
Okay. Maybe we could. Does DNR have any specific information for that question?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Danger. Work for DNR Trails and Waterways. I think the best way to answer the question is. Approximately $210,000 we put out for maintenance right now. We would increase it by approximately $140,000, so you can kind of see the percentage that we would be increasing the maintenance. Also, we would be looking at increasing some of the grants also.
Okay, Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This a question could be for Mr. Danger. How many trail passes are sold right now in a year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, I don't have the exact. Oh, I guess I do.
Representative Howes at the rescue, right?
In the past, and I think this is last year. Oh, it's a percentage. Daily ski passes, we sell about 25,000 a year. Annual ski pass is about 11,500, and the three-year pass is about 2,200.
So, Joe?
Chairman. And would any of this money be used to increase the reimbursement rate for equipment? And the question is directed in the sense that the ski trail system that we maintain with that I'm the administrator for, we use a $160,000 groomer to maintain that trail. We're only getting $48 an hour, I think it is, for that piece of equipment. Is any of this money going to be used to increase the reimbursement rates?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gill, the cross country ski program has been, underfunded is the right word, but because of the limited amount of money, their grants are substantially lower compared to the snowmobile. So basically what we have to, we've been working with MNSA to decide whether we should increase the individual grants or add additional ski miles. I don't know if I answered your question. The thing is, we're not going to raise the rates. We would possibly raise the amount of the grants that they could charge against.
Chairman, that would not cure the problem of first off, you know, we use the equipment as well in the snowmobile program.
Right.
So we're using it in a dual purpose, one to maintain the ski trails and far more use, but still we're way behind. I think our actual cost is over $100 an hour to run the equipment,
mm-hmm.
and we're only getting, I think it's $46 or $48 an hour. We, in the snowmobile thing, you know it better than I, we've outgrown our funding. And, you know, I don't know how long we can keep going on, depending on charitable gambling and selling wieners and shirts and hats and fundraisers and, pardon me. And so anyway,
right.
you get my point.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Bill, the difference between ski and snow is your grant probably for X amount of miles is $100,000, whereas the cross-country ski for the same thing is $50,000. I mean, that's the proportional, that their grants are so much smaller, so they're actually donating more time and stuff because their money runs out way quicker than what it does in the snowmobile grant.
When's the let's see, the ski pass is a new element, isn't it? Wasn't that done in recent years?
Mr. Chair, the ski pass I believe has been in since the mid 80s.
That's new to me. The I just remember it happening. That's all. I knew it would happen in my lifetime sometime. But the has there been any increases since it was first established? And if so, what's been the time duration between the increments?
Mr. Chair, yes, there was an increase. I believe about 4 or 5 years ago, at 99. I'd have to run back and grab my file to see how much it was exactly.
Yeah, we might have some preliminary data here. Okay, it looks like 99 was the main year that everything was raised, and then during that was at one time, correct?
1990. Mr. Chairman, yes.
Is there a reason that you settled on 14 instead of 15 and 39 rather than 40? I mean, rounding them out, was there a reason for...
Mr. Chairman, there was a $1 fee for the selling of the pass, which goes to the...
That makes it 15.
Right. So it makes it even.
Wow. Yeah, I figured there's some logic and reason to that. I just had to catch up. Okay. So that makes everything, all three dollar amounts actually $1 higher, and so that's what it actually
Chairman,
would
yes.
cost the person would be 5, 40, and 5. Or 15, 40, and 5. Any other questions? Okay. Is there anyone who wants to testify for or against House File 1518. Okay. House File 1518 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Representative Magnus, House File 279. Representative Magnus moves House File 279.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and members.
Good morning, Representative
Madden. I think I'm here already. It's been a long morning already. Good morning again, I mean, to some of you.
That's the second meeting.
Thanks for the hearing, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the hearing. Today we're talking about House File 279. And in House File 279, we're asking for an appropriation of $140,000 for fiscal year 06 and then also $140,000 in fiscal year 07. We appropriate this from the general fund to the Bowser Board of Water and Soil Resources for a grant to Area 2, the Minnesota River Basin Projects Incorporated, for floodplain management, water retention, and for administration of the programs. And Mr. Chairman, we have a grant that so far is still in the bonding bill for the Area 2 projects. With me this morning, Mr. Chair, I'm pleased to have Carrie Netsky, coordinator of the Area 2 program, and I'd like to have Carrie describe a little bit about the program.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Carrie Netsky, and I am the coordinator for Area 2 Minnesota River Basin Projects Incorporated, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of House File 279, where we're requesting $140,000 per year for our organization's work in floodplain management. Before you, a short booklet summarizing our purpose and the work that we do in the realm of flood damage reduction. Rather than recapping that book, I'd rather speak on what we do, what our organization does for the nine-member county, and ultimately the state of Minnesota. Area 2's approach to flood control over the last 27 years has been to basically stop the water where it falls and to construct floodwater damage reduction projects in a stair-step fashion down the Scotoda Prairie, or commonly known as the Buffalo Ridge. The ridge, of course, is known for where the wind turbine generators are being located. That ridge also creates elevation differences up to 80 feet per mile in the Lacaparra watershed and 50 feet per mile in the Redwood River watershed. And due to these very steep slopes, flooding becomes an annually occurring horror for the people who live there and try to make a living from the land. Our approach allows for a landowner-friendly solution to control the erosive forces of floodwaters while reducing further damage to stream banks that add the sediments and nutrients to our already impaired waters. This area of southwest Minnesota has a long history of flooding, dating back to 1916, when the Corps of Engineers looked at flood control efforts of the Yellow Medicine River. Area 2 suffers from a secondary form of flooding as well, and it's coined crossover flooding. This is where the water not only flows in a northeasterly direction to the Minnesota River, but also in a southeasterly direction going down the coteau, allowing that water to skip watersheds on down. So essentially, our flooding dilemmas are twofold. I'd like to draw your attention to the third page of your booklet. There is a graph entitled State Funding Synopsis, and that illustrates our funding for the last 10 years. Dating all the way back to 1978, when the Area 2 organization was first created by statute, annual funding was provided by the state for administration and construction purposes at a 75-25 cost share. The funding amount was $250,000 annually until about the mid-1980s, when that amount was reduced to $189,000 annually. That was about a 24% cut at that time. That funding remained level until 2001, when during the Ventura administration, an effort was made to eliminate state funding of all joint powers boards within Minnesota, of which there were about 9 or 10 at that time. Only 3 joint powers boards survived that attack, with mild to severe cuts. Our cut was 26%, which went from $189,000 a year down to $140,000. Just 2 years later, in 2003, those 3 joint powers boards were zeroed out entirely by the governor's office. Through legislation like we're proposing today, Area 2 was able to restore some level of funding at another painful cut of 25% to $105,000 annually. Although our organization has been able to survive at this level, additional income had to be obtained by hiring out our engineering services just to balance the operating budget. And as we look forward to receiving a large amount of funding for construction this year through bonding appropriation, which we are still included as of last night, that appropriation does not allow for administrative expenses. One additional strain to administrative budget is the lack of engineering services that are to be provided by statute. The engineer assigned to Area 2 retired 7 years ago and was never replaced due to budget constraints at that time. Now consultant engineering services are paid through that same budget, consuming another portion of the funding that previously paid for additional staff or services such as soil borings or testing. Area 2 has proven that it can do more with less, just as the governor has asked, with the continued budget cuts that we have been given. But we are at a point where the member counties cannot do this alone, and we need to continue the successful and beneficial partnership with the state just as it started 27 years ago. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the committee today, and I'd be happy to take any questions if there are any.
Any questions for members? Representative Phoenix.
Yes, thank you. I'm looking at your book, and I see, you know, you're creating floodwater storage capacity, which seems good. And I look at your road retentions little piece and see that you are, setting up a little area for water, but then you meter it out. Do you all also create wetlands that will be permanent or that can be permanent, or is everything metered out over time?
Mr. Chair, Senator, or excuse me, Representative, you are correct. We do have some projects where the landowners do wish to create a small, shallow duck pond, we call it, usually up to about 2 feet in depth. And again, that's up to the landowner. This is their land and their choice. Of all the projects we do, I would say about one-third of them do include some kind of a wetland development or a duck pond, whereas the other ones do remain pasture, continue to be pastured, and then just provide that temporary floodwater storage when it's needed.
If I could follow up.
Yes, sir. Are we getting you?
If I remember maps correctly, this is an area that is very short of groundwater, and it seems to me that for all concerned, that our best dollars would be spent in places where that water could remain, those duck ponds, as you call them, because then it would be filtering that water, for one, and helping your horrible groundwater situation for another. So it seems to me, as I think of this, that from a state's point of view and funding this, that metering doesn't feel like a good idea to me. Creating, putting the priority on the shallow ponds has a lot more benefit over the long haul for the ducks, and we certainly have a ducks problem in Minnesota, for the groundwater. So that's just a notion I have in looking at what you're doing.
Mr. Chair, Representative, one comment to add to that is due to the topography down there and knowing that the ridge was built by glaciers and that it's glacial deposits, one of the problems that we do have building larger ponds to hold and retain the water is that there are a lot of gravel seams or gravel lenses, they call them, that go under, and that's doesn't allow us to keep the water in there. If you recall hearing the Lazarus Creek Floodwater Retention Project in Yellowmesson County, that was the biggest reason why that did not become a permanent pool area that could become a recreational area, was just because of the sands and gravel lenses underneath there. But that is one of the limiting factors we have, is dealing with the very soils we have down in that ridge. But I agree, the duck pond idea and the small waters do a very good benefit for where they fit in.
Any other questions? Ms. Netsky, as I'm looking at the materials, although you talk or it mentions a great deal about the flood mitigation efforts and road retentions and so forth, the governor's proposal is actually saying that the dollars, this is a your efforts are actually duplications, and I assume they're talking about administrative duplications. Is that what your money is going for? Because the bonding money, I think, takes care of the flood mitigation efforts. And so this is what you're asking for is dollars to assist in administration of your joint powers group?
Mr. Chair, you're correct. The funding that we're asking for goes for both administration and some project construction, both. Again, like I said, you know, years ago these started at $250,000 annually, so then the majority of the money did go to projects. But over the years, as those budget funds have been reduced, you know, down to $105,000, I believe right now we're using about 60% of that funding to go towards administration and another 40% for construction purposes. Mm-hmm. Regarding the duplication, I'm not exactly sure where they're seeing the duplication. I think they're looking just at the flood damage reduction program in general, since the DNR has their own program. Ours is that way, too. What they don't realize is that Southwest Minnesota, where we're at, has got a very special topography, and our flooding dilemmas are much greater and much more severe than the rest of the state. Although I've not talked to, you know, the DNR or even to the governor's office regarding where they feel that duplication of efforts is, I do not see that if they would roll that funding into the DNR's budget that they would be able to be as successful or efficient in doing what we do with that, with those funds.
Okay, because it does specifically state in the governor's change item that the previous budget cycles, other joint power organizations under Bowser were eliminated in an effort to reduce duplication of services. Area 2 is the last one currently in operation, so evidently you're a member of a... I didn't want to say that. I was trying to think of something else. But, yeah, it's become a kind of a change as to how they're operating, so... we'll see if we can't get some additional understanding of exactly what they're talking about in regard to duplication. Representative Peterson, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the committee in general, just for information. They make a good argument about the uniqueness in that the drop is very significant from the South Dakota border to just Montevideo. And just factually speaking, there's more drop from the South Dakota border at Lake Hendricks to Montevideo than there is from Montevideo to New Orleans, so on the Minnesota-Mississippi system. So these floodwater retention projects are needed and need to be monitored and continued and eventually repaired, because essentially they do meter themselves out, because there's clay and gravel lenses and you know, there's just groundwater flow through them. You know, one of the rules of the world is every dam leaks, and these couldn't be permanent dams anyway. I would just like to make a statement that this group has a history dating back to the 70s, has had success, and if maybe they're last on the list, but I think they make a strong case to be concluded just for the fact that they've got relationships with everybody who's involved with water in Southwest Minnesota. And there's long-time board members who have served and continue to travel through my district and Representative Magnus's district and are known in the community. Maybe that doesn't validate why they exactly need the money, but there are tangible benefits for this money to be appropriated to make sure this group can continue to keep an eye on what are really flashy watersheds in Southwest Minnesota that do need monitoring. And when the floods do come, you know, I like to go out and watch them personally. If it's raining to the west, I just drive fast so I don't miss it. And because they're there and they're gone. And I'll just remind people, we talk a lot about sediment in the Minnesota River Basin, and this area of the Minnesota Basin is one of the cleaner portions because it's at the top of the watershed. But, you know, in 2003 at Jordan, they measured 70% of the sediment yield out of the Minnesota River came from simply four major rainfall events. That I don't think is known by a lot of people how flashy that basin actually is. So this helps at the top of the watershed to make sure Montevideo and Redwood Falls and further on down don't have to sandbag every single year. Thank you.
Okay, I appreciate that. And it's it seems to me like as there some of the methods that were used in the past have kind of phased out, we're also at some point we are now starting to take a look at how we're going to rejuvenate some of that activity, specifically with regard to the Clean Water Legacy Act. And it seems to me that the actions or the activity that you have going right now is something that would fit right into that new type of an approach, because that's, we have to start at the top of the watershed and kind of work our way down in order to try and mitigate the problems that are being dealt with further downstream. So it seems to me that there may be, even though it may not come out of the current program, we may have a new program that would be able to take advantage of the existing activities you have out there and give you the support and the technical support that you need in order to do even a better job in the future or more aggressive job in the future.
You're exactly right, Chairman. It's a key part of the clean water efforts that we're having in the state and certainly in our area at least. And as we pursue efforts to look at cleaning up our water, you know, we're faced with a challenge that we recognize that programs like this are very important. The challenge we have is how do we fund them, and that's why we're here today.
And it, because of the competition on the, from the general fund, that's where you're getting, I suspect, getting the most of the pressure from. And hopefully we'll be able to come up with a mechanism where you actually be in your element and be able to get the support that that type of activity needs. As a matter of fact, you because you're one of the last remaining joint power groups doing this, you might become a model for how others should be doing this activity also. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seems to me that things like that could work together. We'll talk about how maybe we can get those issues worked out long term. Any other questions we have? Anyone want to testify for or against House File 279? Okay, House File 279 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hackbarth, House File 1470. Representative Hackbarth moves House File 1470.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 1470 is a dry cleaner bill that we may have seen here before a few times, years past. What we did a few years ago was to put in statute that the commissioner could adjust these fees accordingly for a few years, and they tried that out, and it worked very, very well. And there's a sunset on that now, and that went away, and we'd simply like to reinstate that to give the commissioner the ability to adjust these fees to keep the balance at approximately $650,000. So that's pretty much the bill, Mr. Chairman and members. We have with us today Ms. Sherry Munyon that represents dry cleaners, and if you have any questions.
Any questions for them? What are the... Can you give us a little idea as to what the dollars actually are able to help you do?
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat the question?
What the dollars are being used for, what the $650,000 actually helps you accomplish?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the funds are used for remediation. They clean up sites that have environmental damage to them. And the provision, the law was originally passed in 1995, and in 2001 the legislature amended the law to allow the commissioner the ability to increase the funds as necessary to maintain a minimum balance. The reason for that is the flexibility is necessary as we have fewer dry cleaners each year. The components, the chemicals that are used for cleaning change, and some of the different chemicals have lower fees than others. So when you take a look at these issues, the fund doesn't stay at the same balance each year. And the dry cleaners had agreed to have the commissioner maintain an authority to increase the fees as necessary for this minimum balance. Unfortunately, there was a sunset in this provision, and it wasn't caught until after it expired. So the commissioner no longer has that authority. We have reviewed the language and the provision with the PCA, and there are no objections there.
Okay. And Ms. Money, and I might have missed it, but as to who you're speaking for today or representing?
Sherry Mennion, representing the Minnesota Cleaners Association, and Dart Poach, one of the board members, is here with me.
Okay. So the Cleaners Association is supportive of this, and means you're going to pay a little bit more. And,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is their initiative.
Great. Okay. Any questions from members? Any additional testimony?
Mr. Chair, committee members.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Dart Poach, and I own a leather cleaning operation on East Lake Street in Minneapolis. I also one of 12 dry cleaners who donate their time over the past years to serve as board of directors to look out for the best interests of the dry cleaning industry. And we are in complete support of this bill, as we were back in 1995 when we approached the PCA so we could together work out a deal where we could save our livelihoods for contamination that may have occurred during legal practices, waste disposal practices prior to the 1980 Superfund bill. And we also were in support back in 1991, allowing the commissioner to raise the fees as needed to bring in $650,000 of new money coming into the fund. And I believe that, well, I know the PCA believes that that amount coming in is sufficient to take care of the needs. There's about $550,000 of monies being spent in remediation, and there's approximately 25 sites that have either been cleaned up completely or are in the process of being remediated, and that's a good thing. So we are completely in support of this, and this particular legislation is the utmost important to the dry cleaning industry. It's a vital tool for all dry cleaners and ensures the environmental cleanup is possible when necessary. Thank you.
Questions? As I recall, this was in 1995. Isn't Representative Holston's bill? Is he the chief author?
House, Representative Houseman, Alice Houseman.
Okay.
And Senator Lessard were key authors.
Okay. Somewhere along the line, I remember Representative Holston getting involved at that.
There were many, many, I believe back in 1995, through all the hearings, all the committee meetings, I believe there was only two no votes for this whole thing.
Yeah.
For all those things.
He's since gone to the dark side, but he's
Mr. Chairman, I think there's been a couple of changes to this legislation in the last few years, and I think former Representative Holston carried it for a while, and Representative Workman also had a bill on this.
It's a very good program, and I can remember or recall when the industry was bringing this forward and really saying they needed the dollars in order to get the cleanup that was needed statewide, and it just it was a very proactive move on their part. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to fully support your efforts, and we'll see what the committee's decision is, but I personally think it's a very good idea. And, any other questions people have?
Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion, and we need to send it to Ways and Means.
Okay. Is there any testimony for or against House File 1470? Okay, and you want this to travel on its own?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. And the motion will be a House File 1470, be recommended to pass, and be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Any questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members.
Members, I think that takes care of our agenda for today. Is there anything else I need? Okay. We had talked about, or mentioned in one of our earlier committee meetings, if anyone wanted more detail or background on different issues that we have, and that we would be willing to do that in a workshop type of format. No members have contacted Mr. Reinholz indicating that there's any areas of concern, so I don't plan to do that unless there's actual need. We don't need something just to take up our time. So, Representative Wiginius.
Yes, I had asked PCA, and I think I'm talking about the right time, about their water fee permit fees, because one of the things that's happening is we are not doing some Superfund and landfill cleanup, because those monies are now going to be used for water permits. And I have to say I have a real objection to that. But one of the things we need to look at is, unlike air fees that are paid for by the person who's requesting the permit, water fees are not paid for by people requesting the permit. So now we're planning on using solid waste dollars, as I understand it, to subsidize those water permitting fees. And so I thought it would be important that we looked at those water permitting fees, and I recollect asking in committee about that and have received no response. So I had assumed that that would be coming down the pike at some point.
Can we get some information on that?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Wiginius, I'll work with PCA and talk to you to get you the information you requested.
Sounds good. Anything else that we need to be researching or getting information for as we get towards this decision-making after we get back off of our little break here? Okay, I sure hope everyone has a good break. I intend to take a little vacation, going down and see my son in Texas, and take a little car trip to parts of Mexico. So if I don't return, I had a good time.
Okay. Just remember, what goes on in Mexico stays in Mexico. Don't be keen
on that. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, members. I'll see you later.